No, I'm looking at the stream list.
I told Brian I don't mind this.
It's a filter man.
Hey guys, so it's about 2:59. So we have the next session on storage class memory in Windows by Neil Christensen. So I am sure you know him. Neil, please go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay. So I did, at the last PlugFest, I did talk a little bit about this, but this is a much more detailed slide deck and exactly what's going on. For those of you that don't know what storage class memory is, here's a little background that I give. Basically, it's non-volatile storage with RAM-like performance. In other words, today it sits on the memory bus. And there's lots of different names for it sitting down there. The two names you'll hear me use is SCM for storage class memory. That kind of represents the hardware side of it. And then we use this direct access storage, or DAX, representing kind of our software implementation of it. This is just an example. This hardware is real. You can buy this today. This is called an NVDIMM-N. Basically, all it is has RAM on one side of the DIMM and flash on the other. And there's a little microprocessor on there. And if you lose power on the machine, it dumps RAM to flash. And when you power it back on, it dumps flash back to RAM for you. It's all quite automatic. And then they have some sort of power. In this particular example, it's a rather large capacitor that's plugged into it. It takes about 2 minutes to dump 8 gigabytes of RAM into the flash. And so it has enough power to keep that DIMM up and everything running for that long. Hopefully some of you heard about Intel's announcement earlier this year about 3D XPoint. It's another one of these, it's designed as a new type of persistent storage that is byte addressable. What they're going to call it is this Optane. Do I get laser pointer? Optane branded products. When this comes out in a DIMM factor, they'll be called Optane DIMMs. It's not available today. It's going to be out in the future. Intel's not telling when, but it'll be out in the future. What you are seeing now is them coming out with SSDs that has this new technology in it. If you don't know about this, this is quite cool. You should go and read some of the press releases. It's the next step. You know, flash was invented 30 years ago. This was kind of the new next step. Okay, so the bottom line of this new technology is this is another disruptive technology that's being introduced. You know, I'm sure many in here remember when we had hard disks and when SSDs started coming up and we found, wow, these SSDs are so fast compared to hard disks. Well, this is another leap like that one where we have this storage class memory. And again, it's disruptive technology that's going to impact us. And over the next several years, we'll see how. Customers want fast performance. And the thing that we've learned as we've studied this is all of our guys' software, all of our system software, we're in the way to the customer. We're just slowing down what they're trying to do. And so we're defining some new models for this, and we'll get into what that means. But it is interesting. Customers want to access it fast. They want it to behave well. And they want application compatibility. And these are kind of conflicting goals. Let's take the most advantage of the new performance, but I want compatibility. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that. Now, this is Windows goals for storage class memory. We want to provide a new mechanism to allow an application to have zero copy access to this storage, which means it's not buffered, it's not copied in any way. They get direct access to it. And we'll tell you how we're doing that. One of our goals is that most existing user mode applications will run without modification, which means we didn't add any new APIs and we didn't modify any existing user mode APIs to allow for this direct access. We did want to provide a model where we are 100% compatible, and we'll talk about that. And then we have all coded our OSs, our applications for the last umpteen decades have made assumptions around disks and about sectors. And one of the important ones is that our failure models these days are sector granular. You either get old data, you get the old sector, the new sector, or you get a failure, the saying you can't read the sector, that the data is bad for it. But the thing you don't get is subsector mixed I/O. And that's a part of the problem that comes up with storage class memory, and I'll tell you how we're dealing with that. Because there's a lot of applications that simply cannot handle that type of failure because they've never been coded for it. So what we're doing is to give an application the most performance, we're introducing a new class of volume. And what we're calling this is a DAX volume. And I didn't put the commands in here, but we'll talk about it. Basically, when a user creates a DAX volume and memory maps a file on a DAX volume, that memory mapping is pointing them directly to the storage class memory hardware. So there's no system software in the way. They can do byte reads, byte writes, and it's being persisted as they go. In our environment, and so this maximizes the performance because none of our software, and I'm including our OS software as well, is in the way for them doing their thing. Now, what we have chosen is you choose DAX mode at format time. It's a format time decision, and one of the reasons is because there's compatibility issues with components like file system filters, you guys, BitLocker, VolSnap, and I'll talk later about some of the compatibility issues with them. And so you decide at that time that I want a DAX volume. Also be aware that there is some functionality loss in the file system to have a DAX volume. We'll talk about that. And today, we only support DAX volumes by NTFS. The REFS support hasn't been done yet. At some point, it will be added at some point in the future. This support is part of our upcoming Windows 10 update, and it's going to be part of Server 2016. So this is coming this year, guys, and it'll be out there in products. Okay, so let's just talk about a little bit about our implementation so you understand what's going on. So we do have a new driver. There's an SCM bus driver that is not part of the I/O path, and then there's an SCM disk driver. And it's a disk driver just like any other disk driver, except what it's doing is it's just doing memory copies underneath. It's just copying between RAM and this persistent storage. So if you get I/O down to it, it's really fast. It's faster than anything anyone has today. We have chosen for overhead reasons that these are going to look like native 4K disks. So they have a 4K logical and 4K physical sector size. And again, it reduces the overhead of having this type of stuff in the system, and I'll tell a little bit why later. The new storage driver, there are some new byte addressable functionality down in the driver layer that is supported by this, and then management of this stuff is also part of it. So let's get to what the file system does. So I mentioned earlier that in this new model, when I have a DAX volume, and I memory map a file, it points directly to the hardware. Well, how this actually works is that MM asks the file system at section creation time if this is a DAX volume or not, and if it should be direct mapped. And the file system makes the decision, yes or no. So it's the file system to choose. This is not going down the ERP stack, so filters cannot suppress this. This is a direct call between MM and NTFS. And if the file system determines that we actually are residing on SCM hardware and the volumes have been properly formatted for DAX mode, then it'll return yes, and then we can get this direct mapping. And then how this works is, so MM basically has a file with offsets. And so what he does is there's a new FS control that he says, hey, give me the physical address range for this list of files and offsets. And he calls down into the file system. And the file system calls down to the storage driver, and the storage driver returns back a translation of ranges of LBAs into physical addresses, and then MM sets up its mapping tables using those physical addresses. And at that point, the user has direct access. Now, what this means is that memory mapped I/O in DAX mode has zero copy access, and what this really means to you guys here is that there's no paging reads and no paging writes in this scenario. So think about how that impacts your filter when all of a sudden you have a model where there's no paging I/O anymore because they're talking to it directly. So let's talk about, so that's memory mapped I/O. That's what we do in that environment. Let's talk about cached I/O. So basically, when the cache manager, when someone opens a file for cached I/O, when we do our first read or a write on it, CC sets up a cache map. And what he does is he also sets up that same type of mapping with MM, saying, I want direct access. And it'll do the right, based on that this is a DAX mode volume and I'm on the right hardware. And so these maps through the cache manager are also directly mapped. And what that means is IO, cached IO isn't going down the storage stack anymore, it's just going directly to the hardware. What I call one copy IO, because you are copying it out of the user's buffer into the cache. But again, it's far more efficient than what's been in the past. Cached IO continues to be coherent with memory mapped IO. And again, no paging reads and no paging writes in cached IO paths. And in fact, you'll notice that the lazy writer thread doesn't run because there's no purpose for it, because there's nothing to lazily write, because it's being persisted immediately. Now let's talk about non-cached IO. As of now, we are sending non-cached IO down the storage stack and letting the SCM driver do it. One of the reasons we're doing this is because of to maintain the failure mode granularity that people usually expect for non-cached IO. Because if a device goes bad, they do a non-cached IO, they expect it to get that back immediately. We have debated whether to change non-cached IO to cached IO inherently. All I will tell you is we may change it. And so don't take dependencies on this behavior of how cached IO works and how non-cached IO works, because we may change it at any point in time. So just be aware, but this is the way it works today. Here's just a little simple block diagram. See what's going on. This is just a regular volume going down, doing IO down through our storage class memory driver. This is just kind of a visualization of what a DAX mode volume would look like. An application has a memory mapping, goes to MM and goes straight to the hardware. Cached IO goes to the file system and direct, and then non-cached IO is coming down this path. So it's just a visualization. Oops, wrong one. Okay, so let's talk about file system metadata in DAX mode. Now, it turns out that NTFS was designed long ago to recognize torn writes on 512-byte sector devices. It can, you know, a lot of its IO is in 4K chunks. It can tell that, hey, I wrote three sectors out of my 4K, and it has this whole algorithm. The algorithm doesn't work very well for a failure at any byte address. And so because of this, we've decided to have NTFS metadata not use DAX mode sections. Also, the other reason why is because it's a journaled file system, we need to guarantee the ordering of writes to go out. And so for our metadata, we're just treating it as we always have, and those metadata IOs actually do go down to the stack. And so this is a scenario on NTFS where you will see paging reads and paging writes, but it'll just be for metadata. Now, do not make assumptions that will stay true in the long run. We have some thoughts on how to take at least some of our metadata files and convert them to DAX mode. And so again, please don't make assumptions as you play with your filters in these environments that, oh, I know non-cached IO, so I can do something special on it. Oh, I know metadata, I can do something special on it. It may change at any point in time. So please do not make assumptions around these things. I'm just explaining how it's working. So let's talk about impacts on file system functionality. So in a DAX mode volume, because a memory mapped file can have direct access, there's no driver software anywhere in between the user and their hardware, we cannot do anything like encryption. So we lose NTFS native encryption support, EFS. We lose our built-in compression support. We made a decision not to support TXF. One of the recent changes in the USN journal is range tracking, where you can track, it'll track regions of the file that are being modified. We can't do that anymore. And then also, we lost the ability to have resident files on a DAX volume. And again, because if someone memory maps it, we don't know what it's changing and what's happening to it. And so there's no resident files either support. So this is the functionality inside the file system that goes away when you have a DAX mode volume. And if someone has a question, you're more than welcome to holler. Now, additional things. So when it sees a writable memory map section, NTFS no longer knows when it's modified. So the question is, how do I update the modified time or the access time if it's enabled? Or how do we update the USN Journal to tell you that, hey, this file's been modified because we see a write? The problem is we don't have the ability because we don't see any paging IOs anymore. And so what we've done is we've modified NTFS that when it sees a writable map section created, it just assumes it's modified at that point in time. And we'll update timestamps, update USN Journal, it'll signal directory change notifies. It just makes assumptions that if someone went to the effort to create it, it's not going to be silly and not do anything with it. If you have products that are creating writable memory map sections and not writing, please stop that. Create a read-only section. Only create a writable section if you're actually going to make a change, because in these environments, we're going to assume changed if you see a writable one. There is another piece of functionality that is not going to be currently available, is we don't currently support sparse files in our DAX environment. We do plan on adding that support in the future, but it didn't make the cut. And as of now, you cannot defrag files that are currently memory mapped. And again, we'd like to improve that and make it work in the future, but it's not supported today. Okay, so I kind of hinted at it. So we have two modes. There's DAX mode, and then for compatibility is what we call block mode. And block mode is just a volume like it's always been. It behaves, you don't lose any of this functionality. All I.O. goes up and down the storage stack like it always has. All your filters work as they've always worked in the past. Everything behaves compatibility. And so that's what we call block mode volumes. And again, you make a decision at format time if you want block mode or DAX mode. The default is block. So if you have storage class memory hardware and you go and format a volume on it and don't give the switch for DAX, give the DAX switch, you'll get blocked by default. Again, fully compatible, supports all Windows file systems, and everything works as expected. It just runs really fast. It runs faster than anything you've seen. They're great. Because of all the compatibility issues, we've actually defined a new volume device class. And the issue was, well, I'll get to how we're dealing with filters in a minute. But the issue we have, one of the issues that came up is, hey, there's all these volume, so now I'm talking about volume filters. So stuff sitting below the file system. We have all these volume filters out there, and there's quite a few of them. How do we make them not attach in this environment? Because I have a plan for file system filters, but we didn't have a plan for volume filters. And what we came up with is we're actually defining a new volume device class called an SCM volume, storage class memory volume. And basically, because no existing volume driver even knows about this new guy, none of them will attach to it. And it's really nice because VolSnap does not work with storage class memory drivers because, again, it can't copy protect space because it doesn't know that it's being changed, as an example. BitLocker, software encryption does not work in this environment because you have no point where you can convert the data to and from an encrypted state because you're just making it available. And then, as I said, lots of third-party volume stack filters. So with this new volume, none of them attached to it. It's a very clean environment. So you create a DAX file and you'll see nothing on the stack except the stuff, the internal stuff we've created to support it. If you have a volume filter and it needs to support DAX, you can do that. Just make sure it really understands the environment and will work. And just as a comment there, there is no support for mirrored or parity spaces. So you can't really mirror a DAX volume. You can't have parity on a DAX volume. And again, the reason why is you don't know when it's changing because you're just exposing it to the raw user, so you don't know when to make a copy. This is just a list of this is another picture kind of the IO stack. You can see with a traditional, all the drivers in there, and it's too bad I left BitLocker off this stack. I should have put BitLocker in there too. With SCM block, you'll see VolSnap and BitLocker are all there. Though the storage driver is actually optimized. It's not a store port driver. It's kind of a monolithic driver. And so they eliminate all the conversions, everything else. It was too slow. You know, traditional store port drivers convert everything to SCSI, and then the mini port converts it back to what it needs to. We don't do any of that with this stuff, so to make it very fast. And then in the DAX mode volume, it's even more out of the way. There's no vol snap, there's no BitLocker, there's just volume manager and your driver. It's a very thin stack. And with the arrows, if you read my fine print, you can see application for memory map gets direct access. For cached I/O, the file system gets direct access. Okay, so let's talk about mini filters in DAX mode. I'm sure a question many of you have. So to minimize compatibility issues, what we do is we simply don't tell any of your filters about it. None of your filters are going to know about a DAX volume, and none of them will attach, because we don't know what the impact of your filter is going to be on this environment. But we gave you an option to be able to do it. There is a new flag, new registration flag that says support DAX volume. If you give that flag at your mini filter's registration time, then you will start getting the instant setup notifications. Do not do this if your filter can't deal with it. If it can't deal with no paging reads and no paging writes, please don't do it. And so we're asking you only do this after you've verified that you support DAX semantics. Legacy filters in DAX mode. I know there are some of you out there that have legacy filters. Quit using legacy filters. There is zero support for DAX on legacy filters. We block them. They will never be able to attach to a DAX volume, period. There's no bypass, no nothing. No registry key. You can't attach. So if you have a legacy filter and you want to deal with this, move to a mini. That is your only option. And I'm sure, I'll reiterate that I'm sure Christian talked about it. I was not here for his talk. We're going to start blocking legacy filters. We have the infrastructure already in place. We have a registry key that'll block legacy filters. It just happens to be on now. So the legacy filter's life is short-lived. Please move away from them. Okay, compatibility issues with mini filters. So again, I'll reiterate again, no paging I/O. It doesn't exist on DAX volumes. So data transformation filters like encryption and compression, they simply do not work in this environment. If you have an encryption product that does software level encryption, I don't know how you're going to ever work on a DAX volume. If you have hardware assists, you know, maybe there's a possibility in there, but it has to be, you have to realize, application talking directly to hardware. You have no touch point to do any transformations. There's no ability for you to get in the way. Antivirus filters. Antivirus filters are interesting. They're actually fairly minimally impacted, at least all the ones I know, because they scan on open and close. They don't scan on read and write. But what does matter is how they detect that something has changed. When I talk to our AV filter guys, the Defender guys, about this issue, basically what we told them is you just need to realize that if a writable map section is created, which all filters can see, just assume it's changed. And so that's the change that they have already made. My recommendation to all AV filters here is to make that same change. You're just going to assume the file's modified if you see creation of a writable map section. That should make you pretty transparent to this environment. Just some other examples. Replication filters. A DAX volume is a real pain because it's difficult to detect when a file has changed, and it's even more difficult to track what regions of the file are changing. So in this environment, it's like, well, maybe I just replicate the whole file when they're done changing it. Replication filters are a problem. I was looking at our quota filter. For the most part, it was pretty, should function fairly well, because we do look on writes to see, you know, if a file changes on a write. But actually, on memory mapped I/O, if you grow a file via memory mapped I/O, MM actually tells us via a set file size. So we actually know that the file is changing, and your filter will know as well. So they're okay. I didn't look at all classes of filters. There's many classes out there in the hierarchy. If you have questions, if you want to come and brainstorm with me about the impact on your filter of a DAX mode volume, please come talk to me. Be happy to discuss it. So one of the questions people ask is, I got this DAX volume, and I took my imaging tool, and I imaged the disk, and then I plopped it on a hard disk. What's going to happen? And so our model is that we will allow you to do that, and it's going to behave like a normal block mode volume. Won't be able to tell the difference. And then you can use features that aren't allowed on a DAX volume. You could create an encrypted file. You could create a compressed file. We're actually, NDFS is defended against these scenarios. So if you then image that back to DAX hardware, and we see you trying to access, you'll be able to open an encrypted file, but if you try to read and write from it, we'll just fail it in the file system. So we're actually resilient to these scenarios. I will warn you, if you image it and BitLocker encrypt it and then try to bring it back, it's probably going to look raw because BitLocker isn't even attached to this stack and it doesn't even know about it. Don't do that. Okay, so I said we cared about sector atomicity. And what there is there's an algorithm that Intel created called the Block Translation Table. BTT is what we refer to it as. And basically, it's the age-old adage in software, add a level of indirection and you can solve all problems. Well, that's all that BTT does. It's just a big mapping table. It's indexed by LBA, and it contains the physical address that represents that sector. And what BTT does is it grabs a free page, there's a few reserved pages, copies to it. When it's fully copied and committed, does an atomic swap of pointers. And so what it does is it scrambles the physical address that represents that given LBA. It can change on every write. That's all that BTT is. But what's nice is it gives us sector atomicity. We either see the old sector or the new sector, nothing ever in between. The problem is there's some compatibilities issues with this algorithm. Specifically, in a DAX mode memory mapped file, we've given MM the physical pages that represent this file. And guess what? Those can't be scrambled because we have no ability to tell MM that they changed. And even if we had the ability, because of middles that are in the system, there's no ability to swap the contents of a middle because we don't even keep track of them. You know, someone generates a middle and it goes off through the IO stack and an ARP. We don't even know where they are. We have no ability to synchronize or update those things. So what we do is when you have a DAX mode volume, I think I talk about it next. This is talking more about what I just described. So what we do is on a given write, the file system decides whether this given IO, this sector, these IOs for this sector can be remapped by the storage driver or not. And so what we've added is a new flag to the ERP stack flags, this SL persistent memory fixed mapping. And basically it tells the storage driver either you can use BTT or you cannot use BTT is basically the bottom line that it's doing. And again, the reason for this is because NTFS metadata wants BTT for sector atomicity guarantees. We don't do a good job of detecting subsector torn writes. So for NTFS metadata writes, we set the state such that we tell the driver, hey, go ahead, use BTT for those. On a block mode volume, we tell every write to use BTT because we're in compatibility mode and we want to maintain all the existing semantics. But in a DAX volume of all user files other than file system metadata, we say don't use BTT so we don't swap those around. This is how we can control it on an individual per IO basis. It's coming out of the file system, going to the storage stack. So for the file system filters, you generally won't see this. One last thing to talk about is application use of storage class memory. One of the things, again, Intel has started a user mode application library called the NVML, Non-Volatile Memory Library. I know the L is redundant, NVML library. Basically, we are working with Intel to port this library to Windows. They have it running on Linux. We've made good progress. This is a library if you guys want to, in your environment, if you want to go to the work and use storage class memory with your products directly, that's fine. You're more than welcome to. What this does is abstract out some of the hard problems of doing atomicity, making the guarantees that everything's committed and doing the right thing. It's a set of user mode. This isn't kernel mode. This is a set of user mode APIs that Intel has implemented. these are kind of the different classes of libraries, and there's a ton of APIs and all of this. This PMMIO is where you can go get more information about this. We hope to have a first version available up on GitHub for Windows by the time Windows ships this summer, Windows 10 ships. So, in conclusion, this is a very exciting new technology. This is opportunity for innovation. This is like a 10x performance improvement over SSDs, over flash that we have today. But it's disruptive. Anytime you have that much of a large jump, it's disruptive to our environment as well. We've made trade-offs. We have compatibility mode. We have block mode, so you can continue to use it and get great performance and a great performance. And again, it's faster than anything you have today. But if you want even better performance, you can modify apps, do this direct mapping stuff, and they can get better performance than they've ever had. I'll bring it up again. Our software, and I include me in it, is a barrier to performance. System software hurts performance. And so over time, you're going to see more and more customers. It will take time, but customers will use it more and more and more. Be ready. The revolution is happening now, and it's here. Some of the things I see coming in the future is at some point we'll be able to boot from this stuff. So there'll be boot OS. The OS will boot from storage class memory. There's concepts like execute in place that we're pondering on how to implement these ideas. There's a lot of innovation that's coming in this space that'll be here over the next few years as we grow, as this whole environment evolves. So think about your products. Think about how they can work in this environment. Also be creative and think how you can leverage this environment to improve the products that you have. Because there's great opportunities in this arena. And that is all I have. Questions? We do have hardware. If someone wants to just try their product or even just go play, we have a machine. Oh. So, and where is the SEM hardware? So, see, this is Peter. 41. So, if you want to tweak your filter, give the registration flag, see how it works, you're more than welcome to try out. How much storage class memory do we have on this guy?
We have 2/8 gigs, one's block, one's stacked.
2/8?
Yes, 2/8.
Oh, 2/8 gig. Volumes, one's in block mode, so you can see for compatibility. One's in DAX mode, so you can try out the new environment. So it's available. Sign-up sheet, it'll be here all week. You're welcome to try anything out. Any other questions? Toby.
Just one comment.
Here, take the mic.
So for the storage class memory servers, you're not running on a VM, you're running on a physical server. So after you're done with your session, make sure you uninstall all your drivers. You can't just go back to a snapshot.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. We do not have virtualization support for storage class memory at this time. It will not be in this year's release. So raw hardware for right now. But it's coming. Be patient. Questions? Wow, I'm glad I explained it so perfectly. Oh, thank you. And I'll give another plug. If you have a legacy filter, get off legacy filters. Move to a mini filter because you're losing support. We're going to start dropping all new functionality we're adding. We're not going to support legacy filters, and this is a very good example of it. Thank you. If you have any individual questions, you're more than welcome to come and talk to me.